My next guest, Mark Sigel, is a, well, he's an LGBT activist, and he's widely considered the dean of American gay journalism. He founded the Philadelphia Gay News back in 1975, the author of the book, And Then I Danced, Traveling the Road to LGBT Equality. Mark, great to have you here.
Great to be with you.
Yeah, and this, well, this goes way back. So in 75, you were openly gay at that point. What was that like?
I was openly gay in 1969. Well, in 1969, if you were a young gay person, what you knew was that the churches said you were immoral, that law enforcement said you were illegal, and the medical profession said that you were mentally ill, and the government said you were unemployable. That's what it was like. It was invisibility, lock, stock, and barrel. All three TV networks didn't cover gay issues whatsoever. There were no gay characters. We never appeared on the news. There was no internet, and there was no cable TV. We were invisible to the world.
Did you get support from your family at that point, or...?
I'm very lucky. When I told my parents I was gay, my father said he knew, and my mother said, I'm a little concerned about when you get older, if you'll be lonely or not. And I assured her that even if I was heterosexual, I could possibly be lonely when I'm old.
That's true. In Philadelphia, was that a gay-friendly town back then? Or?
It was, but the invisibility of gay people made me believe there were no gay people in Philadelphia. So when I was 18 years old, I moved to New York. It was May of 1969, which was the perfect opportune moment to move to New York because 6 weeks later, something in New York happened called Stonewall, and I was lucky to be there.
Stonewall. Tell us what exactly happened at Stonewall.
In June of 1969, like many other months throughout the year, the police raided a mafia-owned bar called the Stonewall. In the state of New York at that point, if you served known homosexuals alcohol, you would lose your liquor license. So therefore, many bars either claimed to not have gay people in them, or they opened gay bars without a license. And the police just turned the other way because they were getting payoffs. But they would constantly raid the bars. And what they would do when they raid the bars would be to harass the openly gay customers, who were usually stereotyped. And if you were a man in a suit and a tie, they would extort money from you. Well, this night, particularly, gay people decided, no more of this. We're not going to have it. And we fought back. We fought back so strongly that by the time it was over, a team of police officers were stuck in the bar when literally they had to call for reinforcements because we literally weren't taking any more from police or anybody else.
And you were at the bar that night, you're saying?
Yes, I was.
And what? How did the issue get resolved then?
Well, it's, in a sense, it's still being fought to this day. Basically, in New York City, the police don't raid bars anymore. That doesn't happen. Slowly but surely, we came out of invisibility. But from Stonewall, we created an organization called Gay Liberation Front. Gay Liberation Front began to first define who we were as people, not allow society to define us. We then went about to create community, meaning health alerts, gay community centers, youth groups, trans organizations. We created the modern-day gay community of what it is today.
Tell me this. By the way, I'm talking to Mark Sigel. He's the author of the book, And Then I Danced, Traveling the Road to LGBT Equality. What I mean, what made you an activist versus just having this be part of your life and not focusing so much on the issue?
Well, when I was 18, I moved to New York because I felt I was lonely. I moved there with no money, no prospects, no place to live. I was one of those street kids on Christopher Street that went into Stonewall. The night it got raided, the lights blinked on. At that point, I still looked like the kid next door. The police had no use for me. They couldn't harass me, and they couldn't extort money out of me. So I was one of the first people to be let out of the bar. I stood across the street, watched as people were being harassed as they left the bar, watched as the crowd got angrier, and slowly but surely, in the counterculture year of 1969, I thought to myself, African Americans are fighting for their rights. Women are fighting for their rights. Latinos are fighting for their rights. When do we begin to fight for ours? And that made me, that night,
that brought you
me
in.
Did, become a member of Gay Liberation
did
Front.
You ever get harassed or assaulted because of your sexuality?
Oh, various times throughout my life and my career as a gay activist. I was even on the American Nazi Party's hit list.
Really? And what, I mean, did you
Thunderbird
actually...
Thunderbird magazine listed me as one of 10 people to be killed.
Hmm. And did you ever get assaulted physically by someone because of this? Or?
At various times, yes.
Yeah. And what, were there points where you thought, you know what, I don't think I'm going to continue this. This is just too
that
tiring.
That was never an option.
Never an option. Okay. And again, Mark Sigal, he's the author of the book, And Then I Danced. In fact, you actually, what, you got onto CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite. You got onto the set during a live broadcast there. Is that correct?
That's correct. To end invisibility on network TV, we disrupted TV shows. And the one that most people know about is the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite, which we're coming up on the 43rd anniversary of next month.
Now, how did that happen? I mean, did you just sneak into the building? Or?
No, I used a ruse to get myself invited into the building.
Mm-hmm. What did you say you were?
I waited until after the commercial break, and I slipped between Walter, who was sitting behind a desk, and the camera that was on his face, and held a sign that said, "Gays protest CBS prejudice." And then cameramen and stagehands wrestled me to the ground, wrapped me in cable, and the CBS television network went blank for 8 minutes.
Wow, 8 minutes. That's an enormous amount of time. Especially
a lot of money, yes.
Yeah. Now, what did Walter, do you remember what Walter Cronkite I'd said when that occurred? Or?
I met Walter during the trial. We were in a break, and as we were in the break, I was talking to my attorney, and I felt a tap on my back. I turned around, and the man said, "You must be Mark Sigal." I said, "You must be Walter Cronkite." And he asked me why I did what I did, and I explained to him that his show was censored and biased towards gays. Mm-hmm. And Walter was the consummate journalist. He refused to believe that. And I said, "If I can prove it to you, will you change it?" And I gave him two points of view, one of which was the last broadcast he had done a week after the disruption, where he finally did a gay news report and talked about New York City having failed for three times to pass a gay rights bill. Hmm. I said to him, "You reported that, didn't you?" He said, "Yes, it was news." I said, "I agree with you, it was news. But why didn't you report the 26 other cities that have passed gay rights legislation? That's biased news."
Yeah. Did he accept that?
He didn't say anything, but he went back into the courtroom. Mm-hmm. And when the attorney general asked him about me trespassing, he said, "Well, I don't think they trespassed. I believe we invited them into the studio."
Right. So you were not, in terms of that case, the CBS brought against you, nothing occurred from that afterwards then?
Well, I could have gotten 10 years imprisonment and a $10,000 fine. Because of Walter's testimony, they gave me a $400 fine, and I was found guilty.
Did that change how you felt about him then? Or?
Well, Walter was one of the most generous people in the entire world. A few years later, just by happenchance, we were in the same building, and he came up and said hello to me, which really surprised me that he even recognized me. A few months later, I saw him at the Democratic Convention, mm-hmm. and he walked over, introduced me to the president of CBS, and then said, gave me his card and said, "The next time you're in New York, give me a call, and we'll get together for drinks or for dinner." And that started a very long friendship.
Really, with Walter Cronkite?
With Walter Cronkite. Uh-huh. And Walter talked about it on his CBS biography that he recorded. And he also wrote about it in his book. And the book last year from Doug Blinkley, which is simply titled Cronkite, has a whole chapter on our friendship.
Well, one last thing, Mark. What is your feeling now? Your feelings about, obviously, now that gay marriage is legalized, what do you view as the biggest challenge for the LGBT community now?
Oh, I think that's a real good question and real simple answer. Today, you can get married anywhere in this country, and 5 minutes later, in most of this country, you could be fired for getting married. Non-discrimination is what we have to fight for right now. It is illegal to discriminate on the basis of race, creed, sex, national origin, but it is legal in most of this country to discriminate against gay men, lesbian women, and trans people.
And you're saying that's the next frontier. Did you end up getting married yourself at some point? Or?
A year and 3 months ago, I got married, and I must admit that I am a happily married man.
A year and 3 months, okay. I mean, that's
a newlywed.
That's a new marriage. I was going to say, it gets more complicated maybe after five, so I guess.
Well, we've been together 11 years.
Okay, so you're...
But we could just legally marry a year and 3 months ago.
Gotcha. It's Mark Sigal, the book, And Then I Danced, Traveling the Road to LGBT Equality, and Mark has been on that road really from the beginning of it. Mark,
46 years now.
46. Incredible. Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.